All right, what's up, guys? This is a long-awaited episode because we haven't done one in a while. It's just Mike with you with Matt Baldovinos. We've had you on, what, 2 years in a row now?
I believe so, yep.
So how are you, Matt? How are we doing?
I'm good. It's good. It's been a fun time, just ramping up towards the draft. This is kind of the like calm before the storm where it's not as much grindy work as so much just talking about what you've been putting in or what you've been doing for the past year. And kind of coasting your way to Thursday and then ultimately just getting to Thursday. But very excited. I love the process of everything about it. I love the rumor mills that swirl during this time. It's all very comforting to me. So I'm excited. I'm having a good time.
So for this specific draft, before we get to commander specific topics, has this been a tough draft for like somebody like you who spends hours looking at prospects? Because there is no like the name wise, it's like really not big. And also, you see, I heard a thing today saying there's executives saying this is like a second round draft, meaning there's like 50 second round grades. And now you're probably gonna, that means you're probably going to be drafting second round players in the first round. So how for you evaluating, how has that been?
Yeah, I think the reason the rap or the class gets such a bad rap is because there's a lack of an elite quarterback prospect. There's nobody who is really has separated themselves as the first overall pick or the second overall pick and maybe arguably the best player in the process. And I just think because of that, the entire class seems underwhelming. But there's a lot of really, really great talented players, like elite prospects at some really key positions outside of quarterback. Specifically, offensive tackle, defensive end, and cornerback, which, if you ask pretty much anyone, are the three most important positions in football besides quarterback. So I do think that because there are some really elite talents there, that there is good talent at the top of the class. But overall, yeah, I think the strength of the class is coming in those day two players. But it's not necessarily just that there's so many second round picks that you're probably going to take some second round picks in the first round. You're also probably getting second round talents in the third and maybe even the fourth round as well. So there are pros and cons to it.
All right, so to commander specific stuff. First, we got to touch on an obvious thing that happened, and that's a new quarterback. So, what's your like that initial reaction to Carson Wentz being traded? And then, since the dust has settled, like, do you have any differing opinions on it?
I think first and foremost, it's an upgrade, right? It's a pretty substantial upgrade from what they had last year. I think Carson Wentz's arm specifically gives you a dimension to the offense that just doesn't exist with Taylor Heinicke, both down the field and in smaller windows. I also think that Wentz is a little less turnover adverse, despite having some, brain dead plays every once in a while, like we see from most quarterbacks. I think Taylor Heinicke was much more willing to put the ball in a dangerous situation, and I don't think Carson Wentz is as willing to do that. And then I know Scott Turner specifically wants to push the ball down the field, and Carson Wentz brings that ability. And I think that's going to be the big change in the offense. I think we're going to see a big step in the amount of points scored specifically, just because they're going to start threatening the ball down the field, which they didn't do last year. My initial reaction, I was upset just because it's a little underwhelming versus what you wanted. Right, we were hoping for Russ, we were hoping for Rodgers, we were hoping for someone of that caliber. You didn't get that, but I still think you're getting a much better starting quarterback than you had last year. And I think good Carson Wentz is probably still a top 12 to 14 quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, when he was traded, it was like shock, obviously, for my job. I'm covering it from a social media perspective. So I was like, I don't have time to think as a fan. And then it settled, and I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. But the first thing you said, arm strength alone makes him an upgrade with what you said about Scott Turner. I thought of one play or a couple plays actually right off the bat. I was like, that play in Dallas, two plays in Dallas actually. The first throw to Terry McLaurin, which with any kind of arm strength and better
Yeah,
ball
the
placement,
wheel,
might
yeah,
be.
where you dust Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah, and it either a completion that goes out of bounds or better ball placement could have been six. We don't know. The other one, same game, De'Ami Brown, the saying, you're even, you're leaving. He had Trayvon Diggs deep, and Heinicke just couldn't get the ball out. And if that's Carson Wentz, that's a touchdown. So, and the whole De'Ami Brown factor, we're not probably going to touch on it in this episode, but there was a plenty of times when he did beat his man, and it's just like
Yep.
nobody's looking at him.
Couldn't get it to him.
But so yeah, I think arm strength alone, we'll see how he does it. If you tell me he's going to have 27-7 for us, I'd be happy with
I'd
that.
be ecstatic. That'd be the best year we've had from a quarterback in a while.
Yeah, probably since Kirk. So I'm optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic, but.
And I would agree with that sentiment.
But that goes, and like we're about to segue into the draft talk, getting him weapons possibly is, you know, on the list of to-dos. But before this kind of goes into draft talk, the Ron Payne situation, which is now kind of a buzz on Twitter the last couple of days with the news that they maybe won't extend him. I think you tweeted out, I have no idea what his value is. Me neither. I was like, what could he possibly get? I know he's not as good as who's the guy went to Indy, DeForest Buckner. But DeForest Buckner, like, fetched a first. I don't think Deron Payne's obviously going to get that. What do you think? I mean, just really briefly on Deron, what's his value, you think? I know you say you don't know, but what would your guess be?
Yeah, I think Jonathan Allen's closer to, like, a DeForest Buckner-level player, right? I think we're talking about the tier under Aaron Donald, right? When we're talking about interior defensive linemen, there is the best player ever at the position who's currently playing right now, and then the other elite guys. And I think Jonathan Allen is in there. I think DeForest Buckner's in there, and Jeffrey Simmons and some other guys. I think Deron Payne is probably a tier or two under that. He's not a double-digit sack threat. Right. So it's not even that he's never done it. It's just that I don't think it's really in his timeline of. Yeah, exactly. It's not in his career arc. And that's OK. Right. He's one of the better, maybe the best run defending defensive tackle in the NFL. Super powerful at the point of attack. And he does provide some pass rush upside. He does provide some, you know, pocket collapsing interior presence. But it's not to the extent of someone who's going to warrant an $18 million contract like Jonathan Allen did. And so I think Deron Payne maybe is going to be looking for something closer to Allen when he's really more of a $15 to $16 million a year player. And I think Washington probably doesn't want to pay another defensive tackle more than like 10, 11 or 12 million because they've already got Jonathan Allen for so much. And in terms of trade value, I do think that you're probably going to see either a day two pick this year and that's it, or maybe like a day two pick next year and a couple, like one or two day three picks this year, if he was to get traded before the draft. I don't see that happening. I would, knowing Washington, I would think that just going into the year, having Deron Payne for the year, then letting him hit free agency is probably just what's going to end up happening.
I mean, with who they let go with Settle and Ioannidis, it's kind of a head scratcher, but
yeah, that's the thing that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's just I'm kind of like, I want to give him the benefit, but I was just like, oh man, you got to show me something. Like I don't. We had like one of these best D lines. Now it might just be broken up pretty fast. I was gonna say something about Deron Payne. I'm forgetting what I was gonna say. All right, we can skip that. All right, so draft. Right off the bat, I'm gonna go with the most probably hype position group ish. I would say is wide receivers, which I think. Like it always is like pre-draft. It's like you see something go up, goes back down, and then it gets hot again. Receivers, how do you have them ranked? I guess I'll leave it at the first part question. I have a second part question after maybe you answer that. How would you have the top five ranked?
Gotcha. So I have Treylon Burks, followed by Wilson, Olave, London, and then Williams. Now, in terms of what order I think they get drafted in, that is drastically different than how I view them. I think Burks is going to be the last of the five to get drafted. I think it's going to be Wilson, London, and Williams in some order of those three, with Olave being the fourth and then Treylon Burks being the fifth taken.
Okay. So with the in that sense, what have you don't know how they're going to be drafted. With the Commanders pick, they do go receiver. What are you saying is best fit maybe?
I think best fit is probably Drake London, right? And that's the one that a lot of people aren't happy with. But in terms of just fit, I think we're talking about someone whose body style and play style is reminiscent of some people that Carson Wentz has played with and succeeded with, and Michael Pittman and Alshon Jeffrey. And then also just playing off of Terry, not that Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave are, you know, Terry McLaurin clones. There's a lot of similarity to their games. There's a lot of similarity to their builds. There's a lot of similarity to their play styles. So it's, I think London is the best fit, but not necessarily who I would take because I'm a big believer in just taking the best player available.
Yeah, agreed. I think I'm scared of London. I don't know. I have for a big body receiver, I just get I'm scarred. Like,
understandably so. Washington has a reason to be,
and not even just Washington. I would say I'm almost like secondhand scarred from my buddy's an Eagles fan, and. JJ Arcega-Whiteside, and I'm like, sure. I think for every like Mike Williams, Mike Williams too. I was gonna say Mike Evans. There's like a JJ Arcega-Whiteside.
Yeah, and so. Absolutely. But I think J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was a little more. I think if an Eagles receiver was going to be closer to Drake London, it would be Doriel Green Beckham. If you remember him way back when, 6'4", 6'5", great athlete. I mean, there was a lot to like. The physical traits were awesome. I think J.J. Arcega-Whiteside just wasn't the athlete that these dudes are. I think Drake London is a really, really good athlete. I think he's a better athlete than Doxson was. And I think he also gives you more after the catch than a lot of bigger dudes do. But there is reason to be concerned with London, because if you can't separate consistently at the NFL, your job is infinitely harder as a wide receiver.
I think that's my main concern. I think – I forget who it was, and I know everybody has their draft opinion. Who was it? Chris Spielman? Was it Spielman, the former Vikings GM? He had like a thing about Olave – or not Olave, about London, how he can't separate.
I'm not 100% sure. But, yeah, I know there's genuine concerns about it. And I know Washington wants a big target, right? Whether it's a tight end at some point in this draft or another, you know, they do get London, and maybe they don't get that this year. But that is the one thing that they're missing in that receiver room outside of like Cam Sims.
Yeah. I saw, I think a guy who I was warming up to, I don't know if Wilson will be available, and I'm not even sure they like him. I heard reports they like Olave in London, but Olave, I saw that Matt Harmon, who does a great job with these like receiver charts where they show all the routes and like how many times they run it versus how many times they win. And Olave is like all green. Like he wins pretty much every route. He just has unbelievable feet. And you see a little, these Ohio State guys almost like sometimes look like Terry McLaurin, because like Terry McLaurin, we know, is a great route runner.
Yeah.
So, I forget, who'd you have? Was it Wilson over Olave?
Yeah, because so the thing is, Olave's kind of, he's pretty close to tapping out as to what he's going to be. He's already the best route runner in the class, really, really good athlete, and he's got good body awareness and spatial awareness to bring in balls when they're in the air and there's contests. But I think Garrett Wilson's frame and dynamic ability is a little bit better. I think he gives you more after the catch. I think he's got a better opportunity to be better at jump balls at the next level. So I think Garrett Wilson's just got a little bit further to go into what he could be. And I think what he could be is a greater receiver overall than what Chris Olave's ceiling is.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's like smoke screen stuff, and like if Wilson's there, they just take him and they consider him.
Maybe. I don't think Wilson will be there at 11 regardless. I think he's going to go 8 or 10.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's a hot take, but my thing, I would be down with Jameson Williams if they took him, only for the sheer factor is like he has such game breaking ability, and I'm not concerned about an ACL. And if he has to miss like 2 games, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
What would you, if they drafted him, is there any concern there, or you're like,
no, I mean, I don't love him. That's like my big hot take for the receivers. Is just, I think Chris Olave gives you 85 to 90% of deep threat ability that Jameson Williams has with being a better route runner, better hands. But I wouldn't be upset if they took Jameson Williams. I'm not going to be upset for getting such a dynamic deep threat. I don't think there would be concerns. I don't think he's on their board. He doesn't seem like someone who would be to me. But I wouldn't be upset. I think a lot of fans would be really happy. And he does have a chance to be, you know, one of the best deep threats in the NFL. And that's always a value to have.
And on that, I think I tweeted this out when I think we put out I think it was a jersey swap with Jameson Williams. And I just was thinking, I was like, he should definitely go by Whiskey Williams. Like, if that's not already his nickname, like, it just sounds, I think it sounds cool. So I would petition for that if he did get drafted by the Commanders. But so now I want to get to the Kyle Hamilton dilemma. If he's available, do you just say, I don't care about receiver, take that guy because he's not supposed to be here? Or is there still a discussion?
I mean, there's always got to be a discussion. If it's up to me, I mean, I think taking him makes sense because you're more likely to get a productive, impactful wide receiver on day 2 than you are any other position, pretty much, given the trend that they've been producing, especially early on in their career, right? And if you look at guys like Terry McLaurin, DK Metcalf, A.J. Brown, Deebo Samuel, Deontay Johnson, like these are all dudes taken in the second or third round, depending. And I just think that if you get Kyle Hamilton at 11, you've still got a good chance of getting a George Pickens, getting a John Metchie, someone like that at 47 in the second round, and then pairing those two players together, as opposed to taking, you know, Wilson, Lunde, Olave, Williams at 11, and then just taking whoever the best player would be at 47. I think the wide receiver you get at 47 is probably going to be better than any other player you get at 47. And Kyle Hamilton, you get at 11, is going to be the best player available.
So I'm assuming, do you have a big board that you've done? Like, where would Kyle Hamilton rank on that?
And Kyle Hamilton, specifically for Washington, he'd be probably my top prospect. But on my personal big board, he's player number 4.
Okay, so he's still obviously top 5.
Draft analysts and scouts view him as like a consensus top 5 prospect. It's just that the position doesn't necessarily warrant a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think he's more like, sorry.
You're good.
I think he's more likely at this point to fall out of the top 10 than to go top 10.
Yeah, it's wild to me. It's wild how I don't believe it's truly just because of his 40 time, because it makes no sense to, based on the guy who was on, what's the afternoon show? The Grant and Danny show. When the guy came on, I forget what draft site he's from, but he was basically like, Ed Reed, like Micah Hyde, all these good ball hockey and safeties. Like, the best one is Ed Reed. He ran a 4.57 or something like that. It's like, Ed should, I don't know why your job's to evaluate and you still let 40 times hang you up on a guy. I don't get that.
Yeah. And I think the expectation for a long time was that Kyle Hamilton really wasn't going to get picked as high as maybe he should have, or as people thought he would, just because safeties inherently do not go that high. We saw Minkah and Derwin fall outside of the top 10. We saw, like, the last time someone took a safety top 8 was when the Jets took Jamal Adams like 6, and they just didn't return the value. So
yeah,
I think that was always kind of a case to it. And then it also just gets to it that, you know, Seattle's not going to take him. Doesn't really make sense there. Just with more pressing needs, Atlanta's got more pressing needs than just taking someone who's going to kind of be a tweener in between. But Washington, someone who's got a pretty firm system set into place of what they like to do, that Buffalo nickel role that everyone's talking about, it's important to them. It's important to what they do. Hamilton's kind of like the dude for that role built in a lab. So really intelligent football player, well-liked by coaches and his teammates. Like, to me, that just screams Ron Rivera and what he likes to do.
And also a point is, shouting out my own network, but Cynthia Freeland, who's a numbers person, Kyle Hamilton ranks in the 80th percentile or above in every speed metric in pads. So basically her reasoning was like, he's not slow, like, stop saying he's slow because of the 40 times. Yeah. So, and you put on the tape, the guy, you know,
he's moving before, that's the big thing, is he's moving before the ball is snapped. He knows what's happening prior to the ball being moved. So regardless if someone starts 2 seconds after him, even if they're 40 yards, you know, 3/10 of a second faster, you're still a second and a half behind because of how fast he dissected the play and how intelligent he was in dissecting the routes and knowing what they're going to do, reading the quarterback's eyes. That's why, like, the picks against Florida State, you can see him moving towards the ball before the ball is released out of the hand. He knew where it was going. That's why he was able to cover so much ground.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen way less than you, but I mean, I'm not a crazy trained eye. Like, I mean, I used to kind of be, but I look at him like, yeah, I don't know how you don't see that.
Exactly.
Like, you just see it. And, he runs down plays.
He has it.
Yeah, he has it. And a big safety going to Washington. I already feel bad for him about the Sean Taylor comparisons he will get.
Constantly.
First of all, is that a Ja Morant, like, throwback Grizzlies?
Yep. Go Grizzlies.
That's dope.
I don't know the scores right now. I'm hoping they're winning. I'm stressed out, man.
Well, I'm a Wizards fan, so I can only watch and watch good basketball. But all right, so let's wrap this up. To keep it in the DB talk, I'm just gonna kind of ask you who you got between Stingley or Sauce, and what's the reasoning there if you had to choose one.
Stingley, just because I think when you're drafting him, there is a possibility in his, you know, world of outcomes that he's the best cornerback in the NFL. And I think if you have an opportunity at that, you have to go after that. But Stingley is my 5th ranked player and Sauce is my 6th ranked player. So it is super negligible. Can't go wrong with either. But if I had to pick one, Stingley, because I think there's a chance that you get Jalen Ramsey.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think some people do act because of, you know, the lack of how much he's played recently.
Yeah. There's a ton of red flags for sure. And, and I think,
but you throw in that 2019 film.
Exactly.
And you're like, yeah, he was amazing as a freshman. And
18 years old. Years old, covering Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah, there's a reason why he got that number 7 at LSU. All right, last question. This I'm stealing this from a segment I've seen on TV plenty of times. This could be a mid, early, or late round prospect. Doesn't matter who. Mm-hmm. Who's that person you're standing on the table for? Like, no matter what, you're like, this guy's going to be good. I don't care what you guys say.
Probably George Karlaftis, edge rusher out of Purdue.
Oh, wow.
He might fall out of the first round, which to me is absurd. I think you're getting a pretty much the same tier or same level player as Aiden Hutchinson. And Hutchinson is the betting favorite to go number one overall. So yeah. I think, like, I feel great about Carlos. I think he has the best hands in the class. I think he's, you know, a strong player. There's minimal risk. I think his floor is really high. Ceiling's maybe not amazing, but I think you're drafting a dude who's going to get you 8 sacks a year guaranteed for the entirety of his career with, you know, 14, 15 sack upside with how nuanced his hands are as a pass rusher.
So it's funny because I saw he's compared to Ryan Kerrigan. It's just hilarious.
I think that's just a Purdue thing.
White Purdue.
Exactly.
It's funny. But all right, I did lie. Now this is actually my last question. 11th pick happens, barring no trades. Who do you see the Commanders taking at 11?
Kyle Hamilton, honorable mention, Chris Olave.
Okay, actually, those are literally my.
I'm guessing it's going to be one of those two.
Those are the two guys I kind of have zeroed in on. If they do draft Drake London, I'll be okay with it because it's another weapon. But at the same time, big body receiver scares me. But,
there's a group of seven players realistically who it will be besides a trade down that like you can lock in. It's going to be one of those seven. And honestly, yeah. It's really six because I don't think they'll take Jameson Williams, but I'll include him because some Washington fans love him. But yeah. It's the Ohio State guys, Drake London, the two cornerbacks, and Kyle Hamilton. The pick's going to be one of those players.
Gotcha.
Unless it's a trade down.
I remember we had a thing, and this happens all the time, so I'm not calling you out for this. It's just funny how this process worked because mm-hmm. we didn't have Jamin Davis when we were talking last year, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. We mentioned JOK and Christian Darrisaw, that's what I said.
Yeah, and I remember the same question I asked you, and you said, like, I think you said three names, like, one of those guys will be it. And then, like, yep. I think we touched Jamin on Davis. Jamin Davis very briefly. It's crazy, but –
Jamin Davis was basically just JOK, but you know.
Yeah. I'm giving him one more year. I'm not gonna crucify the kid yet. But anyway, Matt, thank you very much for this. Appreciate it. Hopefully get this up either sometime late tonight or in the morning so people can listen to it hopefully and get some draft fix. But appreciate it as always, and hopefully our draft predictions come true.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
No problem.